Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, 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 and welcome to The New Normal with me, Deborah Frances White. This is an Instagram live show from The Guilty Feminist about life and feminism in lockdown. And so I'm just going to wait until we get a quorum, and then I'm going to get on our fabulous guest for the day. It's the incredible Kerry Howard. She's known for a plethora of TV shows, my favourite being Him and Her, in which she played the frankly glorious and at the same time horrendous sister character who had an extravagant wedding. Many of you will remember that, and she got BAFTA nominated for it. Very, very exciting. She's all over the telly. You'll see her in loads of things. And today she is on The New Normal telling us about her life in lockdown. So I am going to bring her on now. I can see there we are. And in 5, 4, 3, it's Kerry Howard. Welcoming Kerry Howard. There she is. Hello.
Is this okay?
This is so okay. And I can see you've got your fabulous ring light. I also have a ring light today.
Turn it down. It's a little bit there. She's in the ring. That's nice.
Hey. Now you are on the side. That's the only thing. So we're watching you like that.
Oh.
So I'm this way and you're lying down. Looks like you're lying down. There you go. Yay!
I'll just hold it, sorry. Do you know what? I'm going to put it on another tripod.
Excellent.
I've got so many tripods. It's ridiculous.
I mean, the tech we all have now, we all have a television studio in our own house.
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre.
I don't mind that, you know, because it just thinks, because I live in Bath, so actually going forward, when we get back to our other normal, I have lots of meetings still in Bath because I've been able to do that now. So it's good.
Yes, yes, yes. Someone called Stately Larry says, nice asses, DFW. What brand are they? And I don't know what you mean. Oh, glasses.
Glasses.
So they're Trelease Cooper.
They're so good.
Oh, he's now updating that to glasses. But it sounded like asses. Like, yeah. My ass is my own. Ass is model zone. And it is substantial, and that is becoming more popular by the day. Asses have come into their own. The glasses are Trelease Cooper, and she gave them to me because my old ones broke because I took them on and off 3,000 times a day, and I couldn't, in lockdown, no opticians were open to put them back together, and so she gave me so many different pairs of glasses, and I still have to do a modelling shoot with them all. Indeed. You've got very beautiful eyes, Kerry, if you don't mind me saying. And that sounds like I'm hitting on you at the top of the show. Okay, so Stately Larry was not trolling. He says, oh my God, goodness, I'm mortified, so sorry, typo. That's the kind of gentleman troll we get. It's not really a troll, it's a typo. It's a Freudian typo though, Stately Larry.
Whenever I do go live, I get this guy, I can't remember what his hobby, always says, I want you to have slime on your jeans or gunge or gunk. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of innuendo that I'm not street with.
Ooh, I think that sounds like a horrible kink. But so shouldn't say horrible kink. No kinks are horrible. Sorry, that was so judgmental of me. A non-judgmental kink, if both parties are consensual, but what you should not do is impose your kink on other people, especially strangers.
Yeah.
Just writing to them. Stately Lowry is claiming he's gay, so it wasn't a Freudian slip. Could have been a Freudian typo. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, Stately Lowry, we accept that it was probably an autocorrect. Maybe your autocorrect is straight and sleazy.
Maybe.
But yeah, your eyes are so beautiful. Do people say that to you all the time?
I've had a few directors say that, like in close-ups, they've gone, "Ooh, eyes," and it's like, I think because I'm quite a manic person when I talk, maybe I move. People don't notice. I don't know. I've had it a couple of times.
I've just really, really noticed now on this camera. So the first question of the new normal is, how the hell are you?
I'm okay. I'm holding up all right. I mean, I've been through a massive change in my life anyway. So I was living with my parents for 2.5 years with my two boys. And then the week before lockdown, I bought my own house and I moved in. And I self-isolated for a week before lockdown because Callum, my youngest, had a cough. And I thought, he's got corona. He didn't have just a fucking cough. But I shut down. And it was like, oh my God, I am actually a proper single mum because there's no parents to parent me parenting. But I didn't have that security blanket. It was literally in a weekend wiped away. And then the nation is on lockdown. And I was like, and my mum was like, Kara, if you just stayed that weekend, if you just gone back home, like you could have been here the whole time. Because ironically, Russell, my older brother, moved back home into my room and started a film like show there. And mum's just surrounded by bollocks. So she's got no female energy.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
Russell's moved home.
Yeah.
It feels like Russell could have got his own place by now. Just he's quite successful. if you don't mind me saying.
No. Not at all. His wife.
I mean, so are you, but you were living at home because you had two small children.
No, his wife is a doctor, and she basically was like, I'm going to war. You need to go home and take to your mum's, look after them, and I need to get my head down, and I need to do a really great job, and I can't be, being
looking
a wife.
After you. Yeah.
Yeah. And she knew that Russell, like, at that time, it was like everyone's work stopped, and Russell's never not worked. So she just was like, I can't do that. And I mean, weirdly, Russell did literally just like create a new show straight away with Sky. So he was been really busy and that's been brilliant. But I think he's had, like most people, massive anxiety around people. And in Bath, it's really quiet. And he's going to go back at some point. I really worry about him because London's very busy. And it's we've all got new anxiety now about...
Yes. And that's the thing. We're all much more risk averse than we were 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Like, strangers to us now are walking viruses. For me, it's my family and my friends. I'm like, there's a fluidity of truth. I know that they've been shielding, so I'm okay with them coming into my back garden. And for me, that feels really controlled, really staying alert. Whilst meeting them in the park, having to navigate strangers... That seems reckless.
Could be anyone, yeah. Whereas if your family are coming in and staying 2 metres away from you, you think we've been isolating, they've been isolating, and we're standing back from each other, then you're not going to just suddenly rush at me. Whereas in the park, runners just run up behind you and around you, breathing really heavily.
Yeah.
It does feel like something less trustworthy. Somebody in Camden, I've got my doors open, and somebody in Camden is having some kind of lockdown drinks party. Clearly, I hope it's a group who are isolating together and they're not having mates over, but it is quite drunken and they're singing like sea shanties. It sounds. Could be football chants,
but it's almost like people are kind of like almost gone into that sort of like we're in the trenches mentality and like all stand together. It's like, no, if you stand together, you're all going to get sick.
Exactly. The trenches is not a great place for you right now because you're going to infect the fuck out of each other.
Spot.
The trenches are a hot spot. Indeed. So you've suddenly become a truly single mother. Do you know, it's a shame your parents weren't in Durham, because you could have just gone to them.
Because
you thought your little one had corona, so you could have reasonably thought, well, I'm going to get it, then I'm not going to be able to look after the other one. So if you'd followed your instincts, you would have gone back to your mum's.
Yeah.
And looking back now, that was a real error of judgment on your part. And I'm questioning how much you love your family now, because I think your parental instinct would have led you to a different conclusion. You know, like, do you not have a parental instinct? I mean, that's my question for you now.
I was terrified. So I was just like, I'm on my own. If I catch corona, my boys are potential carriers. Well, I can't send them to my parents because they're in their late 60s and they'll die. And, you know, I had doctor friends that were like, if it's a choice between a 30-year-old and someone your mum's age, she ain't making it. And it was like, that was like the early information when I was like, oh, fuck. So then I was like in my brain going, well, where do my children go? And like, Callie's only 2. And Wesley's like turned 6 in lockdown. So they're really young and like they can't really look after me if I'm bedridden. So that was like the neurosis that was going on in my head.
So you were having the same feelings as Dominic Cummings, but what you didn't do was, you had the same instincts, the same feelings, the same fears, but what you did is stayed locked down and you didn't have another grown up in the house with you.
Yeah. Like most people, and also most people who actually got sick and had young children, they gritted their teeth and got through it, you know.
Yeah, people are worried that I've said something rude to you that you didn't get, that I was being sarcastic about Dominic Cummings when I said, oh, I'm wondering if you've got a family instinct now. It's because he said he followed his instinct. You got that I was talking about him, not you, right? Yeah,
obviously.
I thought so. Somebody said, oh my God, what if she thinks you're being mean, and going, do you not have a mothering instinct? No, I was being rude about him. Yeah, no,
it's like the need for my mum and dad not to die is greater than like me dying.
Well, that's what the weird thing for me about him going there is, if you've got a small child who's 4, if they see their grandma or grandfather outside, they might just run out and hug them. Like, you can tell them, you can't hug granny and grandpa at the moment, but they might just forget because they're 4 or not really understand what a virus is.
But if you're a 4-year-old without mummy and daddy, well, if you don't touch that 4-year-old in 2 weeks' time, that 4-year-old is going to mentally get very ill.
Well, they're saying that they did it so that their 16 or 17-year-old niece could come in and help because she wouldn't be really in danger. And I'm like, it's so implausible, the whole thing.
It's just such a cover-up, and it's self-entitled white men running the country, making rules for themselves, and it's, you know.
They say that we need 75% of the population to follow the rules for it to be effective.
Yeah.
And 82% are following it. So we've got more than that. And Dominic Cummings knows that. So he's like, well, I don't need to worry then. I'm not going to break the NHS on my own. I've told all of these proles to do it, they'll all do what they're told. Then I can actually drive, take my kid out to a castle and let them run around because it's fun and it's nice. And that's 100%.
Low numbers. And then he went up there and now it's got really high numbers. So you just kind of think,
Well, a lot of the people in the cabinet have got it. And it really makes me wonder if all of them just went, doesn't really apply to us. If they actually speak about us in that way, like the proles will follow the rules. I always remember working in a Catholic school once when I was working as a supply teacher, Kerry, in a Catholic school. And there was an elderly, nun who was still teaching there. And someone talked about the rosary beads that they get the girls together. There's a girls' school, get the girls together at lunchtime to do the rosary beads. And this elder nun said, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything or do anything, but it gives the proles something to do with their hands. And it's always stuck with me that that's how sometimes people in authority talk about, they make rules because it distracts the pros. It's like in 1984, you know, when they do the lottery, no one ever wins the lottery, but it gives the pros something to do.
And that's washing, and it's complete distraction, and it's just like, you know, this 2 meters thing. It's, I mean, it makes sense, but then it's, I don't know, when you think about it, and especially when you're in the open air and you're having to stay 2 meters away from someone that you know that's been isolating for 10 weeks and you have been, and you're like, common sense says to you that's like, you're safe to hug, but fear and the guidelines, wanting to break the rules. But I must say this, as a co-parenter, it seems that the guidelines aren't applicable to us. We're allowed to do whatever we want.
Well, that's now, what Dominic Cummings just said now. He just said in that endless press conference, we always said that this might not be possible if you have small children. Well, you know what's going to happen now. Everyone in the country with small children is going to go, none of this fucking applies to us anymore. Give the kids out to this one. You know, I've got so many friends who are like, my God, just what I would do for, you know, and after enough, I've been feeling shit, you know, like I would love to have, you know, get my kids together with one other family, like two families. We could decide we're going to be co-parents. Single mothers I know could have co-parented with another single mother where they, you know, take turns taking the kids. And everyone was saying, we can't do any of that. We can't do any of that. We can't do any of that. That was everyone's instinct. This is the problem, is we've all got a familial instinct about that we could follow. The reason we were all crying is we were all expressly told, do not follow your natural familial instinct. Do not step up and help. Do not ask for help. This is a time when we don't follow our instinct. We follow the rules. And that's what's devastating about it, is he's gone, but you've got to follow your parental instinct.
Oh, completely. And like, I knew someone who rented an Airbnb to have the children and then was told explicitly by the ex-partner, well, great, because he'd moved out of vulnerable people because he was living with his parents who were over 70. And then when he didn't have the children, well, he just moved back in with his parents again, which kind of like defeated the whole purpose.
Right.
The other partner was trying to protect the parents. And then he just didn't. And then, like, and I was like, well, maybe you should call the police because that's a breach of the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And they basically, as soon as she said that it was like an ex-partner and they sniffed domestic abuse, they didn't want to have anything to do with it. And they're like, you can't tell an ex-partner what to do in their own time. And she was like, but isn't this a breach of the guidelines? No. The only way they can police it is if someone says, I've got COVID, and they spit on you. And there's like, that is a crime. But they cannot. How can they police people swapping in between houses? How do they know? It's all a psychological game.
Mm.
We can all go into each other's house. Where's the police? They're not on the street. They're not on your cul-de-sac, are they?
No. No, they've just got to trust that people will follow the rules. And and now, and some people, of course, don't. But now Dominic Cummings has said, you've got to put your parental instinct over anything else. That's what people will do now. That's what people will do, because they'll go, well, I'm not going to be the one who's deeply distressed and has a crying child and is not, you know, people are going to start going, they left town when they had symptoms.
Yeah.
I would be a lot more understanding if they hadn't had symptoms, if they were like, we're pretty sure we don't have it. And it's day one of lockdown. Day one, we're going to go out of town. Like, it's not the right thing to do.
But given the job and all of that, and you kind of think, okay, ship your family up to the grandparents, you go back to London and you get your head down and you work and you don't see your family and you just help cure this pandemic.
But so I don't actually understand why you needed to be in number 10 anyway, because weren't they all meant to be doing everything by Zoom? All of our businesses have gone to Zoom. He's like, I'm trying to get scientists involved. I'm like, scientists will take your call, mate. We've all done everything else by FaceTime. Why would you be going to visit a scientist who could potentially cure COVID and find a vaccine? When you've just had it, you don't really know.
No.
You don't really know you're immune. We don't know anything about this yet. We still don't know if people have had it or immune. You could have just given it to your kid who's given it back to you. You don't know. Like, why would you be going and talking to the very important people who all need to be well? You should do everything by Zoom, which is what the rest of us are doing. Anyway. This is not Dominic Cummings' new normal. This is ours. So I'm going to ask you about you now.
Okay.
Do you have any coping mechanisms that you have created in COVID or from, or in the lockdown or from the time before that helps you stay emotionally, mentally stable? Because being a single parent in lockdown with two small children, when actually you have had that support from your mum and dad for the last 2.5 years, must be a real kind of shock to the system to have two small, adorable, but you know, children, small children are demanding. Very, do you have any, do you, and navigate. Then what, sorry?
Their ages are hard to navigate because toddler needs, so, and I decided to potty train straight away because I'm crazy. Sport, why not? Weirdly, I would say the last 2.5 years where I decided to choose my freedom have been me practicing for a lockdown. Because I've been, when someone doesn't want you to leave, and then they make it their life to punish you and take you to court and lie and say all kinds of, like, you know, I've had my character assassinated by someone that I loved, but like my whole world was upside down. So I feel like I lived the worst, like, disaster, personal disaster. So this is a real test of, like, well, I'm solid. I've got solid foundations, because that really tested me, and I didn't break because I couldn't, because I had two young boys. So I couldn't have a nervous breakdown. I couldn't go and have a blowout and fuck loads of guys like most people do when they separate from a toxic relationship. I didn't have time to have any of that. So I had to be very mature and stoic. And actually that served me well going into lockdown, because it was like, right, I can't have a breakdown. Life has changed right now. Adjust. You can't write. You're not going to act. It's not about you. You're going to be a mum full time. That's your job. Adjust. And once I did that, literally straight away, the pressure, the FOMO, what am I missing out on? It just went away. And because I have a freelance life, I've always been really frugal and really clever with my money. So I made sure that I moved into a property that I could afford. So I bought it outright. So I'm mortgage free. Wow. I'm very happy. And I've got a business that I've saved a lot of money that when I'm not working, I can sustain. So I've got enough to sustain me for about a year or maybe 2 years if I'm really, you know. So I feel I'm in such a privileged position, and I can afford to bring food in, that it's okay. It's okay. I have nothing to complain about, because there are people that can't bring food onto their table and are going to be devastated economically by COVID. Not only people, but like, there'll be people that won't be able to recover from it financially.
Yeah. And
it's been stressful with kids, yes, but big picture, I'm really blessed, and I know I'm blessed, and that gratitude has really pulled me through on the bad days when I can't do anything right, you know?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you can feel the strength radiating out of you, you know, that you've been through this time where someone you loved has, you know, has exhibited, you know, control and has done things to, that have been very, very testing, and that you are absolutely determined. And it feels like you're almost the first person I've talked to that's gone, lockdown, we take it on board. We take it on board as this is one of the things that happens in a year, and you keep going and you keep going and you keep going, and you just, it's almost like it's just it's one thing in a period of your life of many that has asked you to step up.
It's like I've been on the kitchen floor crying, shaking. One time I did that, and I never want to go back to that place again, because it didn't serve me, didn't make me feel better, it didn't give me an epiphany. I just felt wrecked. And obviously sometimes you do need to cave into your emotions, but I just felt I know what that feeling is, feels like to be wretched, and I didn't want to go to that place, especially where I have nobody adult to comfort me and hug me. And I think it's been self-preservation to go stay strong. Go for walks. Finding that I'm so close to the country, which I had no idea that I was. Even when I live in Bath and I'm surrounded by fields, But my life wasn't that. My life was school run, running into London, doing meetings, seeing my mum. And it was a very sort of insular world, and where I didn't really have time for country walks. They weren't right. in my life, because I was always busy, busy, busy. And now it's like everyone's been forced to stand still and just take time and to appreciate your local area and to discover new things. And it's doing those walks now. I'm just like, oh, I can breathe. This is okay. This is actually a blessing right now. I'm lucky. Wow. No one, for the people that have had death, it's not a fucking blessing. It's a disaster movie for them. But
yeah, I always say we're humans and we're trained to look for silver linings. We're all traumatized by it, for sure, to a greater or lesser extent, and probably how much we've obeyed the rules. Not to evoke Cummings Gate,
I've been very litigious and I've been very good girl. I've been a good girl. I mean, I literally had a panic attack in a co-op 6 weeks, because it took 6 weeks for my ex to arrange a proper appropriate place for the kids to go. And so I hadn't gone to a shop, because you're not allowed, you're only one person's allowed in the shop. So if you're a single mum, and obviously online stores weren't working, because I'm not single, so I was a bit fucked to get like food. Luckily my mum was like sending me food and like driving over and giving me like bags and stuff, and Russell, and then Deliveroo added Co-op and Morrison's, and suddenly I could get my food shop in 20 minutes. So that is like literally sustained me and the kids. Wow. And stuff. And I go, oh God. But I've still not been able to get like an online shop. It's just mental. You're like, oh, yeah. God. And there's people that literally can get in the car and can queue, because there's like, you know, adults.
Yeah, I live in Camden, and you have to go and stand on the street 2 meters behind the last person and queue for ages to get into a supermarket, like at Soviet Russia or something like that. And of course, we don't mind doing that. No one's complaining. It's really weird to be in London when no one's complaining. Because any other time, he'd be tutting. They'd be going up to the front, going, how long is this going to take? This is ridiculous. No one tuts. Nobody looks at their watch. Everyone's just like waiting very patiently.
Into that sort of zen, like stress, like there's no stress here, and fine.
And also just like, it is not appropriate to say to a frontline worker who's risking their life by standing at that supermarket door, we don't know how many people going through that door are infected and don't know. And that person's risking a viral load, so you don't have a go at them. And there's nothing else that can be done. Blitz spirit, we all stand in queue and they're absolutely fine. But of course, if you've got two small children, they're not going to be able to stand there for that length of time, and people will tut at you like, why are you bringing these kids in and stuff? So you've just got to rely on, you know, family to drop it off, or as you say, these other delivery services to do it. Is there anything that's something that surprised me, the sudden patience of Londoners, that I've never ever seen patience in Londoners like that before. Is there anything that surprised you about your response to this, or just people's response to this? Anything about this whole thing that's surprising?
I mean, for me, it's like, I'm not surprised by how vigilant I've been, and when someone tells me rules, how much of a conformist I am. I mean, it's like, well, I'm an actress and I'm told to hit my mark, and directors tell me what to do all the time, and I want to be a good girl because I want to impress the director. So it's literally like the guidelines are a director in my brain, and I want to hit my mark, and I'm listening to the tannoy, and I'm doing all the right things. But then you get people going against the arrows, coming towards you, and you get sweat in places you haven't had sweat since you were a 16-year-old girl. And you're like, oh, my God. And that's when I turn into a neurotic, crazy person, because I'm just like, and they look at you like you're crazy. And just because some people, I'm so surprised how laid back some people are. Like, there was a man when I had a buggy and Wesley, and I was walking on the street, and he was ahead of me, and I just went, what are your intentions? This was like about 6 weeks ago. The fear was really palpable.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, just stand out here a bit. And I was like, okay. And I wanted to say, 2 meters, 2 meters. And he sort of stood a meter away from me. Mm-hmm. And I sort of kept walking by like that.
Yeah.
And he just went,
I do that in the street in Camden. I hold my breath.
like it's mental. But he looked at me and went, to be honest, love, I'm not really paranoid about this corona. And I wanted to shout at him, thousands of people have died! But, you know, I've got my 6-year-old son. That would be very scary for him to hear. But it was just the arrogance of this young 30-year-old man who's judging me for following the rules. And that's why I get seething, because it's just like, no, I should be judging you. You shouldn't be telling me that I'm this neurotic person.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
No. You're right. I mean, Camden, sometimes someone will blow smoke on me and I'll be like, if I'm inhaling the smoke, I'm inhaling what you're exhaling. And therefore, if you're infected and you don't know, you know, people still spit on the street in Camden. And I tell them that I won't have it. I'm just like, dude, you can't spit on the street anymore. Those days are gone. That was always gross, but those days are gone. You have to not spit on the street. And I've told a few men that. I never see women. I tweeted about this and said, I never see women spitting on the street. And those people, I tell you, women spitting on the street. I've never seen a woman spit on the street in my life.
No.
I'll see a man spit on the street in Camden every day. And even since lockdown. If I go for a walk, it's not uncommon.
But their saliva is self-entitled and takes space. Whilst we swallow ours, phlegm. Because, you know... I don't want to make a mess.
We've been trained. Swallow your feelings. That's the right thing to do as a human being, is to swallow. I mean, we should not swallow our feelings. We should process them, but we should swallow our saliva. I'm sorry. I just feel quite strongly about it. Also, they're not running a marathon. Like, I know there are circumstances in which human beings might need to do that, but just standing on the street having a fag is not one. Is not one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can you tell me, is there anything you've been binging when the boys go to bed that you think, oh God, I want to tell people about that TV show or that film, a book, anything like that?
Well, see, weirdly, I don't know what it is, but I've gone back to the stuff that I watched when I was an 18-year-old girl.
Like, it's probably sentimentality, nostalgia, like simpler time.
Well, it's just like I went for a walk the other day and the wind blew through me. And I had like a ghost of a memory of my 18-year-old self in a field with that same sensation. And it was like, I had to get home and I had to listen to the Fugees. Like, I don't
know what it was. Wow.
Yeah, it was bizarre. So I've been watching Sleepless in Seattle.
Nice.
Valley, Tootsie. Yeah, great ones. But then I have watched The Affair. I've gone back to that, which is an amazing Sky show. And oh my God.
I watched that. I didn't watch all the seasons, actually. At some point, it sort of got away from the original premise.
Yeah.
But the first couple of seasons, it's so good. If you've not watched it, you see this affair, extramarital affair begin between a man and a woman. Dominic West, who was in The Wire.
Yes.
And what's the name of the actress? Do you know her name?
Ruth Wilson. Yeah.
I don't know what else Ruth Wilson did before, but lots. And she's well known. And the two of them.
Luther.
What was that?
Luther. She was in that.
Luther. Mm. So the two of them meet and you see the sort of spark between them. And then that's half the program. And then the second half of the same episode is the whole thing from the other one's point of view. So you see it from all from his point of view, then you see it from her point of view, and the memories are actually different. And it's so true of life. There's a lovely bit in the, this isn't really a spoiler, but in the pilot that, because it's the first step, but
yeah,
that he, the second time he sees her, she's on the beach and it's night, and there's a bonfire and stuff. And in his point of view, she's like wearing, I think she's like wearing a cardigan, but the sleeves fall off to her.
When it's his point of view, she's alluring. Yeah,
she's got nothing on her shoulders, or something's falling off her shoulder, and it's all like bare shoulders and bare up here. When you see it from her point of view, she's rugged up in a cardi.
Yeah.
And she's sort of basically trying to put him off, but she's, in his point of view, she's very alluring. It's like, that's so true of how you remember your version of events, of you led me on, or you asked me to come back to your place. And like, no, you asked me to come back to your place. And of course, there's this truth that probably in most cases sits somewhere between you, but it's so fascinating. And the first season blew me away for that reason, that yes, everything you see from different people's points of view, and it's not just different camera angles, it's different lines of dialogue, different costumes.
Yeah. And it's fantastic, because like there's a couple of characters that are ugly beautiful. Like Dominic West's character is ugly beautiful. Like he's a classic perpetrator, narcissist, but always the victim, and you kind of he lures you in because you do feel sorry for him. But then as movies develop, you're like, this guy is a psychopath. He does the same thing over and over again. He doesn't take any responsibility, and it's fascinating. It's a really well drawn, likable narcissist who avoid at all costs.
But, yes. Yeah. It's a brilliant show, and that's a sort of oldie but a goodie. Oldie but a goodie.
And if you need to cry, like for me, that's been a good way to release the trauma and the fear, is having a good cry and vet it at that, at the TV, not necessarily have an existential crisis about my whole life, but just really cry about a character dying, and you know, that's really sad.
Yes, catharsis. We need art yeah, because we need somebody else to be on that screen, taking the risk, living the braver life, and we need to feel through them and for them. Someone's saying Grey's Anatomy does that for me. Yes, I think Grey's Anatomy in its early days as well was a peach of a show. Is there anything we can help you with that's like a feminist or activist cause? Is there anything close to your heart that we today could get behind and follow, donate to, get involved with, amplify?
Women's Aid, straight away.
Women's Aid. Okay, so we'll make a story of Women's Aid. Is there any reason that you love Women's Aid, or anything you'd like to tell us about it, or how we can get involved and help?
I mean, they helped me. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And I had no idea I was in a situation, because it wasn't typical. No bruises. And my best friend just kept going, call them. And I remember thinking, so hysterical. But I would give her lip service and I'd go, yes, I will. And then eventually I cracked and I did call them. And then I sort of gave them details. And then they eventually just said, you've been in an abusive relationship. And that was like the floor fell like from beneath me. And I just felt, it was so interesting. I felt humiliated. That was my feeling. And then fear. And then suddenly I was surrounded by so much information, what to do, and the local charities and all of that. And then I had so much support, and I literally, it was almost like I did a degree in coercive control kind of thing.
Wow.
And it just opened up a whole new world, and I was just like, I had no idea. And I had no idea how prevalent it is. Like one in four women suffer with that. Means like you're
did your family and friends around you, other than this friend, spot it and know? Or was it something that you kind of felt you had to manage yourself, and you weren't truly maybe admitting to yourself, you didn't know the signs, and you, of course, you love this person. And
yeah.
Were there other people in your life who were like, when you said, I believe I'm in an abusive relationship now, I get it, that went, oh, thank God you've said? Or were they surprised?
So what, weirdly, when I finally, because it took me three times to leave, when I finally left, I had lots of dear friends come back to me and go, we've been worried for your life. We've been really scared. He's never going to change, and it was just getting worse. And we were watching from afar, and every time you ran back, we'd have to kind of grit our teeth and be like, okay, she's happy now. And like, you know what? It's so common that people yo-yo back, because they're very persuasive. They love bomb you. And, you know, they make you feel like you're the only one that will give them life and love. So it's an ego trip to go back to someone who's like, I'll die if you're not there for me. And that's coercive control. Like if someone said, I'll kill myself. But like, you're raised on, you know, romantic novels and rom-coms, that to have someone who's like, I'm nothing without you. It's actually, that's feared into our brains to be like, oh my God, that man really loves you. And actually, that man's really controlling and not giving you a free choice to leave. Right?
Yeah, because they take it away by saying, well, especially if you've got children with someone.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't want anything to happen to the father of your children, no matter how you feel about them. And that's, horrifying coercive control. I'm so sorry you've been through all that. And I'm so happy that Women's Aid was there for you. And we will make a story about them for Instagram, and we'll get everyone to follow and donate if they can. And I always say every day, if you can donate, great. And if you can't because you've been furloughed or you've lost your job or whatever, that's, you know, there's no need to donate if you can't. But amplifying, giving them a follow, or giving them a retweet or a repost, telling other people, or even sending their details by WhatsApp or text to someone who has got a full-time job. Mm. Their income is the same, but now there's no going down the pub, their gym membership suspended, they're not spending money on movies or theatre nights or anything like that. And now they've got more disposable income than they did. And if you say to them, listen, I heard this story about Women's Aid, and I wondered if you would be interested in, you know, giving them a tenner or giving them a direct debit for a while lockdown's on. They might just do that. And imagine if you're working for Women's Aid and all this money's being diverted to COVID, of course, and people are, you know, holding tight to what they've got. If suddenly they got 100 new followers today, they would feel renewed to go and do something tomorrow.
It is quadrupled the amount of cases that they're having, because, you know, lockdown is like a boiling point. Like, most perpetrators don't like being told what to do. So the person that's going to get it in the neck is the partner. So it's a really scary time for people who want to leave but can't.
Well, it's also about now you're with them 24/7 in lockdown. Yeah. There's no respite. There's no, well, they go off to work for 8 hours and I can go and see my mum and reboot and regroup. It's now like in your face all of the time. And that makes a hot house of a situation like that.
So I was doing a shooting program, and there were women in group that were still with their perpetrator. Now they were going to group to build up the courage and make plans to leave. Now there would be thousands of women, you know, being educated, knowing, finally waking up that their partner does not love them, they're controlling, and this is going to get worse. But then suddenly, one day, boom, you can't go to group. You can't talk on the phone because he can hear you. And it's like that for me. I'm so scared for those people in that situation. They can't get out. Yeah.
It's true. And now, if they're obeying the rules, which of course most people are.
They can follow their instincts.
Yeah. Those of us who are not following our normal familial instincts to see our mums and best friends and all that, we're not doing that. Then, you know, those normal interactions, a place where you, if you are in a coercive controlling relationship or an abusive relationship or combination of the two, one is the other probably, but that you are not able to restore or refuel anywhere else either. And he can say to you, we can't go out, that's the law.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely rife right now. So if you have got a tenner or even a pound to go to Women's Aid, and if you haven't, then just amplify them, send them to someone who has, you know, retweet them, get a bunch of your friends to follow them today, because that will mean a lot to them. And they will be providing lots of extra services to women who, some of them are, you know, trying to call secretly on the phone or trying to get out because it's come to a boiling point.
They can send a text now. If you go to Women's Aid Instagram or their website, there's a phone number where they can text, and then they can silently report. And then once you've logged it, you've got a number log. So down the line, they will take you to court, especially if you have children. And then you've got all those logs of the Women's Aid, and that builds up evidence to prove that you were in an abusive relationship. I did not know this. But also, you can reach out to your GP, and you can talk to your GP about your relationship. Again, I did not know this. Log. And that is, again, it's all about building evidence to prove that this person has been abusive.
Wonderful.
The trouble is, when you get into a court situation, you don't have that filing system because you had no idea that coercive control was abuse. You didn't even know what the word was. It's very much he said, she said, and then it's very, you know, and it becomes like a TV drama. And you're just
people
like,
are getting a lot out of this, Kerry. Really? Somebody here, it's because Daisy says, I'm relating to this loads. We'll head over to donate after this. Right. JZ Beck says, your strength is phenomenal, Kerry. And then JZ says, oh, wow, I didn't know you could call your doctor. So
yes.
Mike's giving you a thumbs up. So, this is really, really important and useful stuff. Do you have any renewed hope?
I'm so silent about this. I've been the mute victim. And I've just been so frightful not to say anything about my experience, and I've not named him or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's like during the lockdown, and I just felt angry, and I felt like, why have I got to be silenced? Why can't I just say the stuff that I've learned and pass it forward? And I'm not denigrating the person, because I just want to say, look, it was my experience and this is my truth. And I'm not going to give you any detail, but it does exist, and it can happen to anyone of any background. I mean, it was so fascinating. The GP that, you know, when I was sort of talking to her, and she started listing all these things and all these feelings that I would feel and all the kind of things that that person would do to you. And she looked at me and she said, and how do you think I know all this? And it was such a movie.
Oh my God.
And I went, because it happened to you. And she was like,
and then that is like a TV drama.
Completely. And then she looked at me and she went, you're going to have 20 years of this. So you've got to buck up. And that was because I was a wreck straight away. And she was right. She was right. It's like, this is a marathon. So get ready. Because they're going to fight you every single time, regardless of the kids. So with all the women that are listening that relate to this, it's, you know, don't let them win. And every day that you are away, you've won. So, you know, the fact that you left, you got your freedom, and you made the best choice. And don't live in fear and regret. It's like, it's your choice. It's your life. You only live once. So go for you, and don't go for being controlled and trying to please other people. Like for me now, I'm like, fuck that. There's being nice and stuff like that. But I did a disservice to myself by constantly putting other people's needs before my own. And now I realize it's like,
yeah,
you've got to look after yourself, especially now.
Yes, especially now, because now all of humanity is being kind of, you know, our way of life of you know, is completely being turned upside down overnight. And we're all experiencing, you know, some trauma from lockdown, the fear of COVID and the fear of the future. On top of that, to have somebody else in control, when we're losing control over basic things like whether we can see our mums or our sisters or whatever, whether we can go for a drink in a pub, we've lost control over all of that. So to have someone else controlling our every day is so untenable. And please seek help if you're watching this and if you're identifying with it. JZ says, sent a link in Australia. I had to get two people to verify my situation and was given $200 to catch a flight home and hid in another friend's house for a month. My God. Run Bait Girl is saying, she's a regular watcher, says, can't you say to someone at Boots as well and they'll take you to a safe room? That's true. Yes. If you go into Boots, because your partner will not be suspicious of you going into Boots, potentially, if you say, oh, I've got to go in and get, you know, some medicinal supplies of some sort, and you could just go up and say, I need a safe house, and they'll take you into the back room. Someone called Tuppen says, I would very much like to speak with you, but I don't know what in sort of what capacity there. Yeah, so there's lots of people saying things. She says, actually, you know what? I don't need to. Okay, you've said it. Ah, I've just heard you talk about a huge period of my life as though it was me. I've been there. You're credible. You're incredible. You're both credible and incredible. That's yes, that, someone from Boots says, yes, that's true. We can take you into the private rooms used for checkups and vaccines.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are options, and there are texting options if you're frightened that your partner might hear you. Thank you for being so open and honest about this. I really appreciate it. And I feel like this is going to help a lot of people, and a lot of people watching this, because this will stay on Instagram Live and then it'll go onto YouTube as well. And people recommend certain episodes to friends. So I imagine there'll be a lot of people who watch it just because it's the new normal and they watch it every day.
Yeah.
Over the next 24 hours or 48 hours, and then they'll be like, I have to send this to my friend. So I think that's the way these social media works now, is people go, oh, you need to watch this. I've been saying this to you for ages. And I think it's really going to help a lot of people, and your bravery to speak out in such a dignified way, you know, without, you're not naming anybody, and you're not, it's clear you're not on the attack. You're on the honest revelation for connection with other women. Or people of minority genders who may be living in this kind of fear. And occasionally cis men as well, but much more rarely, of course.
Completely. Another symptom is also, if you have that horrible lurching feeling in your stomach, like butterflies, and you've got shaky legs, that I didn't know, and your chest feels tight, that is a panic attack, and you're living in fear. I had that for a long time. Whenever there would be episodes, that would be my reaction. And I was losing a lot of weight, and I lost, every time I had my children, so I lost weight really quickly. And it always spikes when you're pregnant and when you've got a newborn child, because it's not about that person. It's about, you give all your energy to keep your child alive because it's a baby. Mm. And textbook is perpetrators. They dial up because they're not getting attention. So they then become more difficult, and it becomes a very dangerous time for women, actually, when they're...
Yeah, because that's the worst possible time as well, because this infant is needing you, feeding off you, needing you 24/7, and then somebody else is demanding this attention in a cruel and coercive way.
Or maybe I feel like that there were cases that I heard that, you know, women weren't allowed to feed the child their breast because the breast belonged to the husband. And it's, you know, it's crazy how some women live like that, and it's just, they're normal, but it's not. And it's like, for me, if you're at home and you have this lurching feeling every, three times a day, you're not in a happy relationship, okay? You might have loving, beautiful moments, but if you have that moment of fear within your relationship, it's, you're not on parity with that person, because they're frightened. And I don't think... You know, this might be a big aha moment to someone listening. Go, oh shit!
Yeah, somebody. In fact, I think it has been possibly in some way or another. Georgia says, could you talk more about that? And do you, Georgia? Do you mean the panic attacks and the feeling of sickness? So it's like it's a sick feeling, and then your legs feel like buckling.
They almost feel like hollow. Your legs, it's almost like you're a vessel. And you're a bag of nerves. Like for me, a panic attack was, you can't breathe. Like that's what I call a panic attack. And I was like coping with this weird bodily sensation quite well, because it would pass. But...
And are you frightened of the other person's emotions being turned upon you?
Yeah, yeah. And just like, you know, they have a big explosion. They're fine because they've done what they needed to do. You've placated, it's settled down. But then you have the trauma of the explosion.
Right. You know?
And it's like you absorb that, even if they don't hit you. Often they don't hit you. But when it gets violent, that's at the very end. And often when you have coercive controlling person, they've been coercive controlling for 20 years. And then one day, after 20 years of micromanaging someone or character assassinating or sort of saying things like, you know, the trouble with you, you don't like people. And like telling them what they think on a
right.
all the time. And then, so you don't know really, you start to lose your sense of self because they're telling you constantly.
They're reinventing who you are to you. Yeah. So it's and gaslighting.
You start to become an anti, because they want to isolate you. And then they're like, oh, she never goes out. She hates it. Oh, I just want to be out. And, you know, you're always the prick in the situation. So when you do leave, all their outer circle agree with them because that's what they were priming.
Oh, I see. She doesn't like coming out. She doesn't like coming out. She won't come out with me. And then that's a reputation built. So it's another way of controlling you, controlling how you appear to other people.
Yeah. So if you have
a partner
that's a red flag. Because
you're
the one that should do your own analysis on your personality, really.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Your own self-care, your responsibility.
Somebody says this is what Trump has done to America. I would agree with that. There is a lot of gaslighting in politics that goes on now completely. Obviously, it's very different from emotional and personal in your house, but there is something to that. Somebody's asking, how do you help a friend out of this? If you can see, or you think you can see that this is the situation for a friend, are there any ways of talking to that friend that might open this up for them?
It's a really hard road because you can give them the tough love and then you can lose them because they're petrified. But I was lucky. I had a friend that just stood by me no matter what. But then the last time I took that person back and then something happened and I always would tell her everything. The way she looked at me, it was almost like she was so disappointed that I would accept that behavior and not do anything. And then I suddenly thought, I'm going to lose my best friend. And this person, I've known this person longer, my whole life. And I just thought, I can't. And that was it. That was my moment of going, I'm living a lie. This is done. But it's really hard because I had a friend very early on in the relationship who saw straight away, and she would tell me, I don't like how he talks to you. I don't like this. And I got angry because I would be crying at her, saying all these things, and then she'd say, you need to leave him. And then I'd get mad at her and storm out, you know, because I was so in love, and this is what love is.
You know, right.
It's dangerous. We're just kind of, don't be so theatrical and tell me I've got to dump him. It's, you know, that person horribly has to experience it more than once. And it, like, the reality is it doesn't take 3 times, really. It's like the average is it takes about 11 times to leave a perpetrator.
But they're good at luring you back in, as you say. And there's a drama and a theatricalness to that big shift of, if the leaving is very horrible and then the, I need you back. You know that I love you. You know that I'll change you. You know that, you know, we're good together. It's painted as sort of part of this huge passionate love affair that you're Catherine and Heathcliff, you're Ross and Rachel, you're meant to be, you're my kismet, you know. And that's why we're so passionate, because we love each other so much, and those other boring couples don't really love each other the way we do. And then that's very alluring if you've had a big trauma and you've had a terrible time. It's extremely alluring to want this, you know, love back. This love bomb is very, love bombs are very, very alluring. And also then there's sort of passionate makeup sex and all of that sort of stuff. And
And then you can't think straight because you're full of oxytocin. It's like, you know, my advice when you start to date again is don't abstain. Don't have sex, because you can't make a logical decision on a human being when your fanny is full of lust. You just can't.
That might be your t-shirt quote. Every day, something that the guest says is put on a t-shirt. It's print on demand, so there's no waste, and they're sourced locally now because Ashling B insisted. But the money goes straight to the artist. So in this case, it's 100% goes to you. There's nothing goes to the merch store or the Guilty Feminist. The profit goes purely to you. And it's always something that people are now saying, t-shirt, yeah. Don't make decisions when your fanny's full of lust. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't make decisions when your fanny's full of lust. It's a great t-shirt. It will sell, I will be honest with you, but it will say ex Kerry Howard, the new normal, and stay at home. So can't make your fanny is full. Is it fanny is full? What, I mean, how do you want us to put this? You can't make a logical decision when your fanny is filled with lust. Hannah from the merch store will make a pithy version of that to put on a t-shirt, and it will be print on demand.
I'm very liberal in the writer's room. I'm like, if someone's got a better tweak on it, go for it, girl.
Okay, all right. So, Hannah, you're free to polish that because it was ad-libbed and it is brilliant. But it is true as well. You're not, just if your fanny's full.
Genitals don't make good decisions. They just don't.
What's that?
Well, genitals do not make good decisions.
Another t-shirt. Another in a series of excellent Kerry Howard t-shirts. Kerry, we're about to get cut off because this only lasts for 1 hour Instagram Live. So I'm going to finally ask you, when you're out of lockdown, if you could go back to doing anything you wanted again, what's the first thing you'd do if you could?
Do you know what I really loved doing is outdoor swimming. Like, there's a pool that's outdoors near me, and it's a 20-minute drive. And that was one of my, when I didn't have my children, I would drive, listen to the radio, have 10 minutes of like 20 minutes of decompression, and then I'd get on in that outdoor pool and I'd look at the trees and I'd be like, I would pinch myself and go, oh my God, Kerry, this is your life, you've made it. And that, you know, I'd love to have that. But I, do you know what, if I never have it again, I've had it, and I've had it many times, and I have that memory in it, and I still feel like that's like, that is my BAFTA nomination, to have a life that was beautiful like that.
Kerry, you're a real inspiration. Thank you for your truth, your humanity, your vulnerability mixed with strength that has really genuinely inspired us all today to look at our lives up close, to start making changes at the things that do not serve us, as you said before, and to be grateful and appreciative for the things that we have, and even some of the things that we had that we may not have again, but we have in memory. You've been a beautiful soul to be on this show, and this is one of my favorite ever episodes. I'm sure it will be watched far and wide. So many people are going to recommend this and send it to people, and it will almost certainly allow a number of women to make a very difficult decision that they've needed to make for a long time. So your power is not theoretical.
Good. Choose you. That's my message. Choose you.
Thank you, Kerry. It would be great for you to come on The Guilty Feminist sometime and talk about this if you want to.
I'd love to.
I think it would really, really help people, because I think also because you're a communicator, you're a very fine actor and comedian, and those communication skills are really mutable. You know, you can just, you know how to tell a story, you know how to pick it up and put it down, and you're doing it with such dignity and respect. And I really admire it. So I'd love you to come on The Guilty Feminist and tell this story again to the broadest possible audience. You've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Right,
I really appreciate it. This week, I'm not sure who else we've got on this week, but I know we've got two Derry girls. We've got Sister Michael, Siobhan McSweeney. We've got Jamie Lee, who plays Michelle. And we've got Nikesh Shukla, who wrote and compiled The Good Immigrant, and has a new book called Brown Baby. And we've also got Jessica Regan, who does our big speeches, but is a very fine actress and is known far and wide. She does our big speeches. She also does the Best Pick podcast that's just been nominated for a British Podcast Award. I'm not sure what order those are in, but it is, I'll repeat the story so that you can see. I'll also put a Woman's Aid story up and an affair story up for Kerry. And check those out. And we've got brilliant guests every single day this week. But we've started with an incredibly high bar on Monday. And whoever's coming next is going to have to really take a big old run up to clear that bar. Thank you so much, Kerry Howard. You've been absolutely wonderful. I can't wait to see your t-shirt.
Yay, me too. Take care.
I'll send you a proof. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.